Welcome, everyone. It's 5 o'clock. We are about to get started, and after this, we are planning to go to some very cool bar to have fun. So if you stay along with us, you can join us afterwards. Before we get started, let me introduce myself. I am Vishal Joshi. I'm a program manager on Windows Azure team. And with me is
Harsh Mittal, and I'm a program manager with the Windows Azure Websites team.
And if we can quickly just understand what is the composition of the audience over here, can people who call themselves as developers raise hands? Cool. For people who consider themselves as IT pro, can you raise hands? Cool. Fewer but stronger. That's cool. So we will actually like try to balance out both of those scenarios reasonably well. And if you have any questions and stuff like that, feel free to stop us, and we will be happy to answer them. At times, if it basically becomes too derailed and we will take you to like 6:37, then we'll probably say, let's take questions at the end. But in the meantime, we can have it as interactive as possible. Does that work? Cool. Everyone is quite silent right now, but hopefully we'll all get... Can everyone just like clap for a moment? Just like... So this sound we love. As many number of times you want to do this, this is completely fine. So, okay, so with that, let's get started.
Okay.
This color is red, by the way, which doesn't look red over here. It is red. So you might probably see a little bit of our fancy animations and stuff like that faded down. But what's in the slide, right? We'll try to get into demos as quickly as possible. So the first thing that we want to talk about is honoring our IT pros over here and sharing some of the challenges that we hear from IT pros all the time and why we thought about building Windows Azure websites. One of the things which people keep talking about is that managing hardware is really a pain, like trying to set it up and like getting the racks, all of those things are difficult things to do. Then people started doing the hosting virtual machines, and they also went so far, and they are still pain. Which is the reason why the concept of PaaS came along. Everyone has heard of the term PaaS, platform as a service. Who has not heard of it? Well, obviously, no one will raise the hand. But the point is that that's when solutions like platform as a service, as opposed to infrastructure as a service, that's where things like Windows Azure websites come into picture. In either of these situations, the big problems, whether you have hardware yourself or somewhere else, people complain that managing operating systems or patching them and doing all of those things are really painful. And it's not really where the core competencies are. We can probably do that reasonably well, and putting it in one place is probably good. And then the other thing which is interesting is that a lot of the developers over here sometimes land up fighting with few of the IT pros over here, saying that we need this particular bit out there, or like, you know, we need this particular technology out there. And that gets slow because it is difficult to manage it individually. On the other hand, with PaaS solutions, we take care of like putting the latest and greatest as fast as we possibly can. So that is something which we hear from IT pros. The things which we keep hearing from developers, and you can probably testify whether that is true or not, getting provisioned resources takes too long. Who over here agrees with it, that when you ask for your IT pro, it takes too long? Okay, reasonable people. Infrastructure adds complexity and increases cost. Who agrees with that? Okay, few people. I guess by the fourth one, no one will raise their hand. So I'll probably not ask that question. Development tools and infrastructure are not connected, which is one of the big problems, because when you have your own infrastructure, you don't spend time in trying to build tools using Visual Studio or stuff like that to connect with your own infrastructure, versus when we basically build technologies like Azure websites and stuff, we can blend those things together very well. And then finally, debugging infrastructure versus code is a problem. So you do not know sometimes whether the things were configured correctly or not, or was it a problem with your code? And so, like, you know, debugging those things are really painful. Versus on the other hand, if you have a situation where you know for sure that infrastructure is not going to be an issue, then you can probably just go ahead, and you will probably lose the excuse of saying it must be the infrastructure, but at least you will know that it's probably your code, right? So, but those are some of the things, some of the challenges that we here all the time, and which is the reason why we introduced Windows Azure websites. How many of you have used Windows Azure websites? Okay, so close to 50% of the audience has used Windows Azure websites. So hopefully what we will be showing over here will be, we'll show a bunch of things which are very new, very much on the next slide. And for the people who have not used Windows Azure websites, the thing is that this is basically a website in a box. You can just basically deploy your code and hopefully it should get started. Key points which we use as a thinking mechanism to determine the features over there are flexible. So one quick question. How many are .NET developers? Oh, almost everyone, right? How many have dabbled in Node.js? Few. And on PHP? A few as well. So I will be using .NET for the very reason that most of you have been using .NET. But everything that we talk about over here can be done with Node.js and PHP as well, which is the reason why like a flexible framework and database, which is like whether it is MySQL, whether it is MongoDB or anything else, all of those you can use with that. Secure, which means that we are working in a scenario where whether it is Active Directory or SSLs or all of those things in an enterprise case, all of those things are now supported inside Azure websites. How many of you guys work in enterprise that you would call as like a big company, more than 1,000 employees kind of thing? Reasonable. That's reasonable. And then obviously scalable, which you will hear about pretty soon. I will skim through the next. So some of these items, the target scenarios that we think you should probably use Windows Azure websites for, like the recommended scenarios, are number one, which is in case you want something which will probably have a global presence, which will be across different geographies and across different locales. If you have a site like that, then that we think Windows Azure websites is a great solution. If you're creating digital marketing campaigns, so if you're wanting to create a new quick campaign websites, you could potentially use even PHP, Joomla, or WordPress, or even .NET for that matter, or e-commerce and stuff like that. So those are the digital marketing campaigns. And business applications are more line of business intranet scenarios where you're basically building it just for your own company. And if you're using those, then we have great integration, like a single sign-on facility with Active Directory and stuff like that. So we think that there are great scenarios for that. And then the third thing is hosting providers. Even though we're saying it hosting providers, but the key point is that how many of you have heard our attempt in trying to go make the hybrid and the cloud consistent? Have you heard that message at all as much? So, and actually, like, no one has, which is funny. So one of the things which we are doing and which you'll probably see way more from Microsoft than any other cloud provider is that the solution that we have hosted in Azure is 100% something which you can host on your own premise, which is very interesting. You should later on look at, we announced Windows Azure Pack. Heard of Windows Azure Pack? How many people? Okay, reasonable number of people heard about Azure Pack. So you can take the solution, make it work on your premise. You can do your own development testing if you want in that, and then when you push it to the cloud, guaranteed to work in the same way, right? So all of these things, even though I'm going to show from a standpoint of cloud, you're going to be able to do that exactly on-premise as well.
And right? To add that, tomorrow there's a session on Azure Pack
where
we'll show, like, you know, how exactly the same scenarios can be done on-prem and how you can get the symmetry between online and on-prem.
So then let's look at the roadmap. This is especially for the people who have already been using Azure websites. These are some of the new things which we are announcing, are going to continue announce during this week. We have SSL, 64-bit, autoscale. You'll probably hear more about it on Thursday. Git clone for existing sites, so you can take a URL and clone from there. Log streaming, we'll show that. Improved monitoring, support for web farms. So some of these things are new, and many of these things you'll probably see a demo for today. So just to make sure that you walk out without, you make sure that you stay till the end, this is kind of like that carrot. These are what we are going to do today, and after this is demos. So what we are going to cover first is that we are going to get into getting started. It will probably help people who have not been in Windows Azure websites. In which we will cover existing ASP.NET sites, some continuous integration with TFS. The next thing that we will do is that we will talk about going live. And how would you basically do that with custom domain, log streaming, load testing, scale, memory dumps. And then finally, you will basically go into monitoring and management, availability monitoring, some advanced monitoring using third party if we have time, SSL and troubleshooting tools, which you probably have not heard before this because this is the first time we are going to show that. That's the reason why it's last, so that you stay. But anyways, does that sound reasonable to everyone? Everyone is nodding? Okay. So we'll get started with the first one. So Harsh, let's switch to... Cool.
So you want to talk about the application? So you want to walk through the application? Or?
Yeah, I'm not sure why it is not...
Okay, got it.
No, you want to actually do duplicate, otherwise.
I see.
Sorry, it's a projection glyph.
Let me do duplicate. All right.
Okay. So this is a sample site that we have created for you guys. It's not really.
So let me show you the site first.
Yeah.
And then we can walk through the code and. Yeah. You know,
so the site, just to give you an idea what we are going to do, the site is basically food recommender. We basically created that just for fun. People can look at the site, they can vote and stuff like that. And what we will do is that this is obviously running locally. Our goal is that we will be able to get it to Azure, and then we can actually do voting, and at the end we can tell which dishes you should probably have for dinner today, which is the most popular dish around. So let us get started with looking at the code.
Sure.
Harsh, can you stop the site so that we can basically like do a little bit of mucking around?
Definitely.
Cool. So it is super simple site. Let's look at the Solution Explorer over here for a second. Yeah, so here you basically have very simple two controllers, defaults controller and results controller. Results is going to manage the results after we do the voting. And the default controller is super simple. It is using actually WebMatrix data APIs, which you do not use in enterprises or stuff like that. This is like a query, which you can see, a SQL query, which is right running over here. But it is super simple from a readability standpoint. We're just going to have opening the database right over here. You can ignore this search part. It is just for the searching purposes, but it's a simple query. We're taking the top 12 items, and then we are sending it to the view back and on the page side. So everyone is familiar with MVC, I assume? Or, yep? Yeah, okay. So this should be pretty obvious. That's what we do. Harsh, if you can scroll down. Yeah, for init cookie, over here, what we have is that this particular place, we intentionally made sure that only if you do not have a cookie, you can actually vote, which means that you cannot just make one dish win just by keeping on hitting the stuff, right? But we can, if you really want to, then you can obviously clean your cookie and keep hitting it again and again, and you get multiple votes. But that's what this thing is, and then it again does a quick insert. And then finally, if we go down, this is the place where there is a action which is saver. That particular action is going to go and save the results back into the DB, which is right over here, right? So that is what overall the UI looks like. If you go back to the site, Harsh, which is running already, yeah, if you hit any one of these things, you'll probably see, touch it anywhere, and then, yeah, it will just basically put a heart around, and that's when the saver method is being called. So that's what essentially is the site. Now, let us take this site and try to do a continuous deployment for it. Right? So going back to the Solution Explorer, if you notice those small little lock icons, the site is actually already checked in inside TFS. Right? And how many of you have used or know about hosted TFS? How many of you use it, actually? Wow, a reasonable number of people. So what we will do is that we will probably take this and try to connect it to hosted TFS.
Sure.
So you want to show us that?
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is first create an empty website with a database and try to connect with the online TFS. So what will happen is that when we do a check-in from here, this website will automatically get deployed to Azure websites.
Yeah, so let's create a new Azure website then.
All right, so.
So this is how you actually create a new website. You go to windowsazure.com. There is a free trial in case you haven't signed up already. And then you can go ahead and just as soon as you go in, you say new website.
Just a second.
How many of you have seen our portal? How many of you think that it's the best management portal of all clouds ever? Yes. Because it is. So,
what's happening?
Okay.
All right.
Do custom create.
So. See, I don't know. How does that sound?
Okay.
And I'm going to create it with a database over here.
And then source control.
Sure.
So you can name your DB or you can create a new server if you want to.
Yep, I'm going to create a new server.
Skipping that. So let us pause over here for just a second. So one thing which we are going to just talk about TFS right now, but in case you guys are using any other source control, then there is a continuous integration option. Uh-oh.
It's okay.
Yeah, so anyways, there's continuous integration options for GitHub, Bitbucket, also your local Git, and also at the same time, you can also do Dropbox. So I'll probably talk about it really quickly while he fills that in. That if you have a GitHub repository and you pick GitHub and you went down the flow of the portal, you will be allowed to pick any repository that you have, whether it is private or public, and it will take the repository from there and hook it up with a Windows Azure website. So every time you make a check-in inside GitHub, it will automatically deploy. If you have time towards the end, then we can actually do a demo for that one as well. But that's GitHub. The same thing applies with Bitbucket. The same thing applies with CodePlex and stuff like that. Right? And one of the things which we are excited about is also Dropbox integration. So we were working with the Dropbox team, and what we did was that we actually enabled you to have a folder, your Dropbox folder, which you can just drag in file into, and that Dropbox folder will be, you can just click inside your website and say sync, and it will basically just suck in the file. So for quick work, Dropbox integration is great. And now we are just about to create a site.
So what we are doing here is that our source code is getting checked in into online TFS repository, and I'm linking this website to that particular repository. Okay. So once I authorize it, it will be able to directly connect.
And this is, again, a standard OAuth dialog for TFS. In case you want to do some OAuth stuff, then TFS APIs are public, so you can actually do OAuth connection and write some automation tools in your company as well. So now as you're seeing that the deployment is, the site is being created. Once the site is created, you will also notice.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what causes the refresh. But yeah, we can go into the site.
All right, so.
Did the deployment get set up?
So deployment, let me try to open Chrome and maybe.
Can you actually like close the browser and try it again, just so that like it will.
I have a question.
Yeah. The database size, we have a 20 meg database, which is for free, right? You can have one SQL, you can have one MySQL database with the thing. But at the same time, after that, you can pay as you go and like just use as much database as you really want. Make sense? Yes. Yeah, Subversion has come up as one of the top asks, and the thing is that we basically make all of these other deployments work using the distributed source code control model, as opposed to TFS. We have a very deep partnership to make sure that the integration works, right? In Subversion case, if we had a hosted Subversion solution, we were thinking about like partnering with someone like that. But to be honest, there is a lot of demand for people using distributed version control systems. So we could do that, but you know, it's what do you pick, right? That's what it is. But anyway, so now, because that thing did not get linked, if you noticed, what Harsh did was that he clicked on setup deployment on the home screen itself, and then it basically allowed him to set up the continuous deployment over here. Once the deployment is set up, what we will actually do, what this does for people who know TFS, is that it actually creates a build definition for Azure to TFS for that particular project. And it sets that build definition as a continuous integration deployment. It also understands behind the scenes which project is actually a web project which is worth deploying to. And if you basically have more than one project, there is a way to configure which project you want to pick as well. Once that configuration is done, then you basically have a build definition ready to be checked into. So as soon as you check in, the next firing should happen. So with that, we can actually go to Visual Studio. Let's stop the site and then look at the Team Explorer. And then in the Team Explorer also, you probably have a bunch of... Let's refresh it on the top. And you can see that CI demo was set up. Let's go and, Harsh, what we should do is that we should probably get the connection string from the other website. Sure. And so what we will do is that since this app uses a database, we will take the connection string, which we created in Azure, and we will plumb it inside the MVC application, just so that when the deployment actually happens, also the database deployment happens. Make sense? Now, we are going to get the connection string, which is like he just downloaded the published profile, and he's getting the connection string from there. But there are also ways, which we can talk about towards the end of the session, by which you do not have to punch in the connection string of your production inside Visual Studio, because some people do not want to do that, right? Like you don't want to take the connection string from there. So there are ways by which we can do that as well. But for now, we are going to take that, go back to Visual Studio, and we'll show you how we have configured that backend Solution Explorer.
Yep. Just a second.
If you just, actually that is detached, which is the reason why. If you just pull it around, you'll have to just pull the entire thing around. Right? No, because this is detached. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. So what we are doing now is, somehow FI key is locked, I think.
Yeah.
That's what is probably happening.
Maybe the case.
Is that what it is?
I don't know, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, looks like that.
It's crazy. It wants to run.
Yeah, it wants.
But now what we will do is that we'll go to the project properties, and inside project properties, what we have done, are people familiar with this dialogue at all? Project properties and deployment of database? What we do is that we...
If I really want to go.
Yeah, so what we are doing over here is that we have a... Wow.
It's really stuck. Okay, I'm not touching it. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you are not touching it.
I'm not touching.
He is indeed not touching it. Oh, let me... Huh? Yeah, that's what we are guessing. Okay, let's... One other hypothesis is that maybe this guy is hooked up. Maybe not. We'll see. Okay. So anyways, over here you can see that what we did was that we basically scripted the database and put it over there where you see the food recommender.sql at the bottom over here. And then in the connection string for the destination database is where we are going to go and replace the connection string which Harsh just copied. Right? So now, alternatively, if you have an existing database from which you want to pull, you can check that box which says pull data or schema from an existing database, give a connection string, and here the options would be schema and data or data only or just schema only. So you can pick any one of those so that you can hydrate from an existing one. So we're going to do that. Then we're going to go to web.release.config. And in web.release.config, we'll take the connection string over here as well. And how many of you know XML config transforms? Few of you. For those who do not know, let me quickly introduce you. There's this small syntax over here which says XDT transform, XDT locator. And there are a bunch of transforms. This transform is like set attributes. So all the attributes that you provide over here will be replaced at deployment time on your web config. There is also replace. There's also remove, so you can do things like remove something, replace something, stuff like that. And locator is actually telling it to say match on the name. And the name, as you see, is food recommender, so it will match on that, and it will replace the connection string. So that's what it is going to do when it is going to deploy. This thing is actually great to use to turn off custom errors or do things of that nature, right? So now that we have made those changes and those all files are checked out already, what we will do is that we can save this and we can do a check-in to see if the deployment triggers, right?
I'm just going to do a check-in here.
And now, it is checking in. In the meantime, we want to actually go home, click on the home, and then from there, what we will do is that we'll look at the builds. Now, what is happening is that you will see the CI build got fired. Right? For those of you who have not looked at the TFS stuff, let's right-click on one of those TFS demo CD build definitions, on the build definitions, and we'll probably just look at how the build definition is. Edit build definition. Yeah. So here, there are four or five different things to note. That is obviously the name and some description. If you go to the trigger is the most interesting one, where you can actually configure TFS to tell it to deploy at what time you want to deploy, right? So first one is manual, or you can then do continuous integration, which is what it sets up by default. But if you do not like it, then you can come in over here, change this build definition, and then that CI which is happening can change to your pleasure. And then there is the source settings, which actually...
Okay, just source settings.
Yeah, the source settings will actually allow you to tell which particular source files you want to pick up. The build defaults is the most interesting one where you can actually go and configure a bunch of things. And then it basically talks about the build controller.
Just
is it doing by itself?
Yes, I think just, okay.
Yeah, and then if you go, that is probably very self-evident, and then if you go to the process, basically, it's going to load a bunch of properties over here. You can close that. I don't think we need to. Oh, it's not actually signed in. Is that what happened?
It's signed in. Let's see if the deployment is getting hooked up.
Okay. Oh, cool. So anyways, the deployment is happening over there. And what would actually happen is that we have another site on which the deployment usually takes close to 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. And the reason why it is so is that TFS cares deeply about how your sources are provisioned. So they actually have virtual machines where your builds happen. And then they kind of like flush them out and then have a new build machine, which is the reason why they have a bunch of build servers in the farm. As soon as you say, continuous integration should happen, it goes and starts pulling out a build machine, copying your sources, does a build and whatnot. So that is what it is. Now next, what we will do, since the continuous integration is happening, in the meantime, what we can probably show is how can you get to the point of like, from the point of continuous integration, if you wanted to go live, what are the bunch of other things we want to do with sure. that website? So maybe you can show how you can turn on logging.
Yeah, so I think one of the things we wanted to do is, so while website is running and say people are interacting with the website, they can see the like voting patterns. Like if you guys are accessing this site and doing the voting, we wanted to show that live. And that's one of the useful features which let you debug some of the things while it's in the production. Right? So, in my solution explorer.
We want to go to, where are you going to turn on the login?
So I'm just going to show in the code.
Oh, yeah. Where you're logging. Yep. Sure.
So if you go to the web.config over here, it's a standard MVC tracing. Just a second. This one.
Yeah, right next to the custom errors.
Yep. So just enable the ASP.NET tracing and hook it up to one of the test listeners over here.
And this is a pretty stock code. So if you care about it, we could probably like give you this, just these two things, and you'll basically enable tracing very easily. And then I think that in default controller, we wire that tracing up as well.
Here. Just writing the trace information here.
So I think this point is worth noting because when you start putting votes for the site, at that point of time, these trace informations are what we should ideally see, right? So, and then in Azure websites, you can go and show wherever logging is turned off or turned on as well, right?
So I think another thing I wanted to show is the custom domains.
Yeah,
right. So because you guys will be hitting this website, so having a nice domain name will help, right? So if you go to the website and go to the configure tab, here I've set up a custom domain, www.azurewebsitesdemo.com for this one. So the process is simple, straightforward. What you need to do is there are two parts of it. You need to go by our domain name, and then here we need to validate, like, you know, this is the domain name which belongs to you. So for that validation, it will ask you to set up a CNAME in your domain name provider back to the Azure website domain name. So I have my GoDaddy page open where I bought the domain name. So here. Okay, it turned out. Just give me a second.
How many of you use GoDaddy over here? What is the most popular domain name provider in Europe? Is there any one dominant provider at all? No? Isn't there like host one or something like that, maybe? Which one? No. Cool, but anyways, like most of the hosting providers should have a dashboard where you can actually go and configure the domain names, which is what I think Hirsch is just about to do.
Basically here, if you see, this is the one for verification. So awverify.www, I mapped to another awverify.azurewebsites.net domain name. So what it does is let us validate that you actually own the domain name. And then you set up the proper CNAME for www to the CNAME which we provide to you. So after this is done, all you need to go back to the Azure websites, this one, and give the domain name. Hmm. Once this is done, you can go to the.
So that is the domain name which is now configured, which means that we can use that for the voting. If you guys have phones in which you can actually vote, or you already are, cool. So yeah, and then what we want to do is actually, since we did the logging stuff, we want to actually show you how to turn on the logging. How many of you have actually seen that Server Explorer getting connected to Azure? Few people have. Yeah, means now the Server Explorer gets connected to Azure, and in that you can actually see the Azure websites directly. And which is, remember the part I was saying, that in case you own the tools, in case you own your own on-premise stuff versus the tools are from somewhere else, that integration is difficult. But we can make it really, really easy. So now you can right-click, and those all logging information and stuff which is coming from the website is exposed right over here. And now you can actually say, turn on log streaming. So there. And then over here, you can also go ahead and... So this is for the IT pros in the room. You basically have got command prompt. There. And then I think that... So people have started voting. And you can probably see that there is voting which is happening. This is from command line, Azure command line tools. On the other hand, there is Visual Studio. So you can actually, while you're developing, you can see the live stream which is coming from your stuff very easily. And those votes are probably piling in some shape or form. Wow, 2398 is a popular.
So what is cool about this thing is that this is not your debug view. This is coming from the live production website.
Yep.
And you are able to see it in real time using various tools.
That is pretty, wow. The 2414 is also very popular.
Oops. This thing is set up as flip.
Give that a try.
Yeah.
Picked up?
Yep.
Okay, awesome.
Awesome.
So that is log streaming, and with that,
so using Visual Studio as well as the command line tools.
Yep. And now if you want to go ahead and let's take a look at the, should we go and look at the results maybe now?
Yeah, probably a good time to.
Enough logging, we don't know what some of these things are.
Yep, I wanted to keep it surprised so I'd.
No one can probably do that quickly. That person is hired. It should be plural, I think. No, Azure results.
Oh, I see.
Wow, I thought Shangri-La would win, but that. It's not true. That's crazy. So anyways, that is the result of that is surprising that it is like everyone is voting for the same stuff.
So everyone likes Spire, looks like.
Yeah, so those are the top four ones. So anyways, that is log streaming and stuff. Next, what we'll probably do is try to go back to slides and talk about some of the... You just went through it. This one, yeah. So let's look at, we just now saw all of these things, right? We saw setting this up, custom domain, log streaming. We are eventually going to jump into load testing and memory dump. And do we want to go and do the demos right now? Or do you want to do the demos, or do you want to like hear a little bit more about the architecture? Like, which one do you want to see? Demo here, demo raise hands. Oh, 3-4, architecture. A lot of people
cool,
want
man.
Architecture.
Let's,
that's awesome.
Let's talk about architecture.
Okay, so, yeah.
All right. So, as Vishal pointed out initially that there are lots of problems associated with managing hardware and managing OS and things like that when it comes to building a service or hosting infrastructure. So what we have done, like, you know, we are, Windows Azure Websites is a platform as a service, but it's built on Azure Cloud Services, which is like, you know, gives us lots of benefits. So instead of going and trying to run the VMs and trying to manage the operating system ourselves, we are using Azure Cloud Services, and Azure Websites is built as a hosted service on top of cloud services. And this is one of the biggest, probably one of the biggest hosted service we have in Azure right now. So right now we are running more than 5,000 VMs and in multiple data centers. So the picture you are seeing right now is, so way to look at it is that we have presence in multiple data centers, and all the different data centers are connected using centralized what we call a GeoMaster. So GeoMaster is the entry point for all the requests and APIs and authentication. So everything comes to the GeoMaster and then gets scaled out to local data centers. So what you are seeing over here is one of the scale units, or like, you know, deployment of Azure websites in one of the data centers. So it's broken into various roles, as you can see, like, you know. So first of all, let's talk about how the requests flow through into, like, you know, if you are trying to run a website and trying to access it using HTTP. So first of all, you'll call, say, HTTP Azure website demo.com. And so the DNS entry will resolve to the HTTP, the Azure hosted service IP address, and it will come to the Azure load balancer. And Azure will route all the requests to Antares, which is Azure websites. So we have multiple roles over here. What happens is that, so the service is broken into three tiers. One is the load balancing tier, you can see, like, now ARR. Second is the web server tier, which is a multi-tenant hosting infrastructure. All your websites are running over there. And then we have database tier in the back end. So all the websites will have the database and the files. So essentially, the website has three things, right? So most of the websites have code, which goes into runs on the web server. They have the config files and content files. So the content goes into the file server, and the config. So what we have done is we have centralized the IIS config into the database.
This is actually a very interesting point, that what really happens is that when you are making for the first time a request comes in, it goes right into the load balancer. It determines based on the IRR functionality that whether your site is actually provisioned in any of the servers, web servers, to provide compute or not. And that is actually figured out based on your configuration, which is stored inside the database. So you know there is a file which is called as app host config in IIS, which actually is in a way virtualized inside the database. We pull that configuration in, instantaneously provision a site for you. So when you actually scale and you say, instead of two, I want like seven or something like that, then in that time, what is really happening is that just new sites on the compute instances are getting created, but the content is not really getting copied, which is most of the time the biggest delay, right? And that content is stored inside this cloud drive, so as you deploy, we basically take the content, put it in the cloud drive. This is a highly flexible drive, which can basically like accept as many number of read writes. And that is what actually that thing does, which is backed by a storage controller. So this is essentially your compute, that is your configuration, that is your data. And that's how, like, you know, it basically gets started. So
I think when it comes to, like, you know, hosting websites and scaling out, one of the biggest challenge you get is how to manage multiple web servers. And with the IIS, the challenge is, like, you know, how do you keep all these web servers in the sync and load balance requests across multiple, you know, web servers? How do you scale out the infrastructure? Yeah. So running a single web server is simple, right? You can run single IIS server. It's very simple. You can set it up. You can, like, you know, put the configuration locally and, you know, all the content locally. But where it gets challenging, like, you know, if you want to scale out the website and put, like, you know, 5, 10, 20 web servers. And given that, like, we are running 5,000 VMs, we have a hosted infrastructure where we need to scale it out for, you know, hundreds of thousands of websites. So what we have done is that made the web tier completely stateless. So if you look at the web server tier, it's completely stateless. It doesn't have any content, no database, no configuration. So any machine can die anytime, and we can replace it. All the content is externalized and put on the cloud drive, shared file server, and which is again highly available and redundant. So we are using Azure storage infrastructure. So using the cloud drive to map the Azure storage as a file server to these web workers. And if you are familiar with the IIS infrastructure, IIS can do the shared configuration. So if you want to run multiple web servers, you typically what you do, you put IIS configuration on a shared file server. But there are like, you know, skill limitations with that approach. So what we have done, and you'll also get with probably the next version of Windows, is that we externalized the IIS configuration into the database.
Yep.
So you are able to, instead of trying to run the configuration from a shared XML file, now it's located in a much more scalable SQL database. Again, you know, which is highly available and fault tolerant. So
want to talk about the load balancer, which is again, this is a small bunch of small depictions on the architecture that you don't really have to care about load balancing and how it is done. Just now, Harsh explained all of that is done pretty automatically. I think some of these things, which are pretty mind-blowing stats, if you look at that, a single instance has an ability to service 13 million hits a day, which is pretty profound. Yes.
So the way we handle the sessions, like, so as you see, like we have a ARR installed as a load balancing tier for Azure websites itself, which is a layer 7 load balancer. Like, you know, it completely understands the sessions, and it's able to use the session affinity. So if you have multiple instances of your website running, it's able to preserve the session affinity by using cookies. So if multiple clients are hitting the websites, it will make sure that, you know, a request from a single client is landing on a single instance of the web server, so that your session state is preserved.
One other thing is that, do you guys know about websites reserved instances versus like shared instances versus that? Do you guys know about it? Probably not, right? So let me first talk about that for a second, just so that you get an idea, and then after that, we'll take more questions. So what we do is you have an option of, think about it this way, that in a way, we have VMs on which we provision all these sites, right? We can potentially provision multiple sites, compute, on any of these web servers which we have, n number of VMs which we are provisioning. We can obviously create one of those. That is essentially like really, really cheap and free. We give at least 10 websites for free. So that is where it comes from, right? You can have something which would actually give you some kind of a shared paid model in which you can probably pay for some of that shared stuff. It gives you a little bit more higher SLA on runtime and stuff like that. And then what you can also do is that you can actually say, you know what, I really do not want anyone else's compute running inside next to my website. Now, although we certainly do guarantee that there is no security issue, there's a very strong sandbox in which no one can actually like interfere with each other's website. So it, for all intents and purposes, you're not really seeing the machine. So if you do not want it to be in a separate machine, it is fine. But then there is throttling, because we cannot actually allow all the websites, like, suddenly, you know, you become super popular and like everyone is hitting your site. We do not want the rest of the tenants over there to start feeling bad about the fact that, oh, my site performance just dropped, right? You do not want that. So there is some amount of throttling which happens when you are in a shared mode. Then there is a mode in which you can actually go and get into reserved mode. And that reserved mode means that you will have a virtual machine for your own self. And you can take the size of the virtual machine. It's usually like small, whatever. Once that is done, then in that compute instance, only your site runs. And you can have multiple instances of that too. So which is the reason what we keep calling about the fact that there is scale up, there is scale out, and we will eventually enable auto scaling as well, which you'll probably hear a little bit more about on Thursday. So that is a little bit about scaling, and we can actually show the demo of the load and scale of the same site which we just built. We'll probably simulate load, and we can show how the scaling actually helps with the load. Yeah. So since we are making there's going to be a big announcement and a lot of details how that exactly works in coming days. So we'll probably Thursday actually we'll be announcing the keynote. So you probably have all of that. Plus there is a talk on Thursday evening which is dedicated to those all topics. So we'll probably save that question for that if you don't mind. Yes. Was some other question? Any other question? Yes. Yeah, that's great. Why don't we actually do the demo of exactly his question? We can basically show him availability monitoring.
Right? Yeah, so sure. And
we're going to give you that demo, which is exactly the question which you asked. So maybe we can just do the, we can actually do that demo. Let's do the availability monitoring, and then we can do. We were actually going to do the scale demo since we talked about scale right now. Which one do you want to do?
So let's do scale.
Okay.
And I think we can answer his question to
just in a few minutes. We'll probably get there, right? You're on a VM, right?
Yeah. Let me just close this and maybe even close this.
Cool. What are we looking for?
So test. So Visual Studio.
It's already there, right?
Test it.
Yeah.
All right. So what we have done, we are using the Visual Studio Load Test tool.
You guys know about Visual Studio Load Test tool, right? Most of you do know about it.
Yeah. Okay. So here. So the Visual Studio Load Test tool is a standard web load, can do the testing of loading of the websites. You can create different load patterns and test patterns. In this case, we have created both read and write load. So you can see here, 98% read, 2% write. And you can also define different browsers, network conditions and things like that. So what we have done is just set up a very simple load test for the website you just saw. And without taking much time, I'm just going to run the load test. What's it's doing is that it's simulating multiple clients, a couple of hundreds clients, and all of those are trying to hit the website at the same time. And on the graph, you are seeing the pages per second. So if you can see currently we are hitting close to 50 pages per second, and 65 requests per second going on. So I'll give it a couple of seconds to stabilize, and all the virtual clients are hitting the website at the regular interval, and as you can see, it's kind of stabilizing at this particular point. So I'll go to the website over here, and if you go to the configure tab, scale tab actually, yeah.
By the way, this is where we were talking about that free, shared, reserved, and changing the course. So
you have two options over here. Either you can scale up, change the size or scale out, right? So I'm going to move to two instances and see, like, you know, if the throughput actually increasing. Just a second. So it's starting the another instance, and you know, some it will be little bit of stabilization. What's
wrong with this side? The theory is that the load, this should actually go up. So, and it does, because we've seen it several number of times, that your request would suddenly go up way more number of times.
Right.
And this is just by adding one more VM. It would basically like put your yep. configuration in it, and there, we were not lying.
So you can see that.
Yeah, so, yes. No, actually, the thing is that that's the beautiful part, that as compared to any other shared hosting out there, right, the SLA of Windows Azure website is way higher. The reason why it is, we can actually give 99.95% SLA even with the regular shared instance. The reason why it is the case is that as we were talking about from an architecture standpoint, everything is virtualized, right? So, like, if something was to go down, it would take us like a flick to just go and spin up somewhere else. As opposed to if you were in any other hosting provider, if that server went down, for them to actually like create another server, create a site, copy the content to it, stuff like that takes a lot more. And in this situation, we have like dedicatedly our QA teams runs the test of like trying to say, okay, we're going to take this down and let's see how it goes. So indeed, there is no, the availability is not really a problem from that standpoint. The performance is what you gain when you actually go dedicated, so, and higher.
I assume that actually the shared websites are at least on two web role instances?
No, so you don't have to. So there is one big difference between the cloud services versus Azure websites, that you get the full SLA of Azure just by running a single instance of the website. You don't have to run two.
So think. Exactly. There'll be a cold call. This is exactly the same model as like a server going down is almost the same model as your site being deployed for the first time and a cold request coming. It almost does exactly the same. When a cold request comes, it says, oh, is there any web server which is actually hosting your site? Nope. Okay, take this one. And then the configuration gets copied, the storage gets mapped, you go. So the same thing would happen in case that server would go down, next request would come in, it would basically say, oh, it's a cold call, next one, and then it goes. So that's the whole.
So that's something we are looking like, you know, as a future feature. It's on the roadmap.
This can get really hot. Yeah, this is going to take like 20 minutes of whiteboarding. We should do that definitely tomorrow. We'll explain why you don't need to do that at all. We worry about session state and sticky routing ourselves. So we'll talk about that
And we would love to actually like hear what your why you need it as well, so that we can probably calibrate and find out. Was there more questions? Okay, so I think that considering it is 6 o'clock now, we have 15 minutes. Technically, we'll probably try to rush through some of these things. Let's go back to. We can skip the slides now, and you can probably go.
We can go to the.
Go to the demo and.
No,
you can skip the slides.
So the another thing, what do you want to show? Memory dump.
Yeah, maybe you can show memory dump. I think that, so what we do now is that in case, like the load situation that you are seeing right now and it is going up, let's say your site stops performing at a certain load and you want to actually find out are there deadlocks or any of those things. Now we also enable you to download memory dumps directly. And what he is going to do is to actually go to a site which is, you're going to go to the Kudu site right now?
Yep, yep.
Okay. So does anyone over here know about Kudu project? Chris knows, sure. Yeah, okay. It is basically our open source project to enable Git deployments to Azure. It's an open source solution. And what it does is that we create, along with your site, we create a sister site. So even though there is one site which is your primary site, there is a site which is actually like kind of a listener or does kind of like a, it's almost like a butler for your site. You know, means it just stays over there and does a bunch of things. It runs in the same credential as your app pool, right? And so we create another app pool, but like apply the same creds as your original app pool, and it has the same access to the content. Because of that site, it gives us very interesting scenarios to light up. By that, what we mean is that imagine that you have your site, which is obviously running in production, and you don't want to do crazy stuff on that site. But this other site can actually take an access to your file system, for instance. It can download files for you, or it can basically download logs. So that is what that site is.
Right.
And actually note this URL. So if you look at this, this is Azure website demo, and this is like scm.azurewebsites.net. So it is just source control management, which is where the project Kudu started for. All these Git pushes to Azure and like all of those cool things which are all done via this website. It's very simple right now, but it actually allows you to...
So previously, like, you know, what used to happen if you get a weird kind of error in your website, you need to call support. And Microsoft support will help you to, like, you know, get the memory dump of your website if you have deadlocks, you know, or performance problems and things like that. Now you don't have to call support. You can do it yourself. And it's as simple as, like, you know, just creating the button over here.
Yeah.
And the memory dump just gets streamed.
So if you remember that SCM part, any website you create, just put .scm, and you'll probably be able to access your butler site, how we would call it, and you can get access to all of those things. Right?
I think.
And then should we then show SSL also maybe?
So I was thinking another cool thing. So this SCM thing has lots of cool stuff. So one of the things is it has a virtual console into your website, and you can pretty much do many interesting things with this. Like, you know, you can do the listing. If you go to the, like, so one of the things I was wondering, like, you know, how many votes did we get, right? So what I can do is find here. So you can see, like, you know, pretty much all the votes over here. So you didn't have to download any logs, do, like, you know, any offline processing and all. You can directly get a console inside the websites in the production and do, like, you know, a bunch of management things from there.
I mean, this is a very well-kept secret. This is the first time we are showing it to someone, that this is, you literally have a console window into your production site without impacting the compute of your production site. And trust us, this is not available anywhere. You can actually just go and start doing ls and stuff like that. Because obviously, it is a web command, so it is restricted to the things that we actually support. But you can do most of the stuff. We have most of the console available. You can do a lot of things. Like, we actually, like, if you get a 404 on your site, then instead of downloading the logs, you can just basically say, search for the term 404. It can actually search the terms inside your
website.
So if you just search for, say, recommender or something, you can probably see the content of your, so right now this is your log files, but if you go back and just change the directory to site, which is where your site files are, that's essentially the content file storage drive that we talked about. That's that particular location. And right now, again, you're basically doing let's just say, and you can look at it that this is literally,
Okay. Well, probably my F5.
But maybe just if you search for it, you can actually go inside the files and you can actually like find things right in there. So that is what we call as kudu exec. Again, this is from your SCM location. So if you go to .scm, you will find all of these things available. So with that, what I want to actually ask you is that since we are like 6:06 and we want to make sure that we respect your time, would you want to see how to configure SSL or would you want to have question answers? So raise up for SSL. Everyone wants to see SSL. Okay, sure. Let's show SSL.
So I think it's pretty simple. All you need is a certificate, a PFX file. So you can go to the configure page. And if you already have a custom domain set, then you can go to the upload certificate here and take the PFX file, give the password. And we support like, you know, normal certificate, wildcard certificate, you know, SAN certificate, multiple host names, any kind of certificate you have, even the self-signed certificate you can use if you want to. And I've already set up the same certificate before, but if you do it, like, you know, you'll see it over here, and all you have to do is, like, you know, choose the host name, get the certificate, and then you can pick between SNI or IP SSL. So are you guys familiar with the SNI and IP, the difference between the two? Like, how many of you know the difference?
Probably no one.
Probably no. Okay. So I think SNI is one of the extension to the SSL TLS protocol. And previously, before SNI, what used to happen is that the TLS handshake, like the initial SSL handshake, if you see how the host name for the website itself gets encrypted. So if you are doing a multi-tenant hosting and hosting multiple websites on a single web server, you cannot tell, like, you know, which certificate to use for the SSL negotiation because the host name itself is encrypted. So this was a big problem for all the hosters, and that's why the TLS standard got modified and a couple of years back, and you know, they came up with a new standard called SNI. So most modern browser, like, you know, you take IE, or like, you know, on the phone, Android, and everything, pretty much supports SNI. If you are using, like, you know, say Windows XP and using IE6, if your customers, you have customers using that, then those are some of the legacy platforms which do not support SNI. And in those cases, if you are using SNI-based SSL, then, you know, you cannot get the proper certificate. So if you are trying to browse the website, it will get the same red bar, like, you know, saying, no, I don't recognize this particular certificate, this is not good, and so on. So if you have a customer base which using those technologies, then you need to go back to the older way of doing it, like where to find out the correct IP, correct certificate, each website is given a dedicated IP address. So instead of relying on the host name to find the correct certificate, what it does is, like, IIS will look up the IP address of incoming packet and then use that to find out the correct certificate for the SSL handshake.
Makes sense?
So this enables you to perhaps probably a shared mode use?
Yeah, that's correct.
So you can use the SSL on the shared mode with both SNI and IP. What IP gives you additional benefit is it supports all the legacy clients.
I mean, the IP handshake has always been there. This is something which came up new. But in case someone doesn't support static IP and stuff like that, then that's when they basically would be able to use this.
So let me show you something, like, you know, www.azurewebsitedemo.com. Just, it's cached right now. Let me use the Chrome. I think it's bad over there.
You're showing the certificate which we attached to the site?
Yeah. So if you see over here, then you can, you know, pretty much go certificate information. So in this case, if you can see, like, you know, you are getting a certificate which is, you know, issued to your particular site. And that's how the browser is validating the SSL. If you want to
what are you looking for?
Probably I can show you in the advanced settings. So TLS. So if you wanted to simulate, like, you know, using the old, let me show it over here. It will show you internet auctions. So I'm not familiar with advanced. So if you go over here, you can see, like, you know, huge TLS. Do you see TLS, Vishal?
No.
Yeah, here. So I think
those are the versions.
That was the problem
here. Yeah. So those versions are the ones which basically dictate which support SNI versus static IP.
Right. So the previously the reason the Internet Explorer was not showing it was emulating the IE6 on Windows XP. And because we only configured the SNI-based SSL, it was not able to recognize the certificate. So after doing this, you should be
which able is the to reason why the site was not loading the
right.
first time.
It was giving the error.
Yeah. So. Cool. So that is SSL. And then the one last probably thing which is worth probably mentioning is that how many of you know about the site pingdom or like sites like that? That was the question which you were asking over there as to how do you find that out. Maybe what we should do is that we should let us go and try to configure the availability monitoring. And that way we can basically then after that we can probably like call it a day. So did you notice that he basically clicked on the home screen of websites and said like you want to configure availability monitoring? Can you go to the
dashboard, endpoint monitoring.
Yeah. Something is.
SSL deployments. Yep, here.
There.
So you can do. And support multiple.
Escape. So this is actually, it is very interesting because what you can do is that you can just basically name your site, and then start giving those locations, which you can pick which locations you want. And what Windows Azure will do is that it will actually ping your site from those locations across the globe, and it will basically make sure that, and after some time, what will happen once you configure this thing, what will happen is that you can actually go to the dashboard, on the monitoring dashboard, and in the monitoring dashboard, it will actually start showing you the graphs. So this graph is actually like coming from like one place now, he configured one more. So if you click on that one more.
Yep, so you can see the response time. And I think I have not set up the
there's
complete
the
thing.
Hong Kong, Chicago.
It's not set up, I don't think so.
Yeah. But the idea is like, you know, you'll be able to see like if the requests are passing, every 5 minutes it will try to ping your site from these three locations. And you'll be able to see the response, like whether it was successful or not, what was the latency, and things like that. So
that probably answers your question, though, right?
Cool.
I think that we can probably go on, but it is almost 1 minute left, so we should probably stop. And thank you guys for coming, and we'll be happy to take any questions that you have. More questions?